So last week, we looked at the biggest disappointments of the season. And in some capacity, maybe those were surprising, maybe they weren't. But we approached it as things that we were disappointed by. So this week, to correct our behavior from last week, we went the other direction. This week, we're not going for things that we predicted. That would be arrogant. We're not doing that ahead of the Christmas season. Instead, we're going for pleasant surprises. So guys, episode number 221 of the Jersey Wall Podcast is going to be pleasant surprises from this season. We hope you enjoy. I think that's the way to go, right? If we do disappointments one week, we got to come back the next week with pleasantries. You agree?
Yeah, what are we going to do? Just let people sit in their laurels?
Yeah, simmer in the disappointments? No, exactly. Yeah. We have to go the other way, which is to give credit to things. And so many things lend themselves nicely to the way that we want to approach our topics of discussion, where we're going to go, okay, last week we did disappointments. Realistically, I could have said Spurs' thing as a pleasant surprise for this season, not because of how Spurs have started, but because of how they've recovered from that. I'm pleasantly surprised by, but then again, that's not true because I'm not surprised. Spurs are Spursing, right? This is just like.
Yeah, this is expected.
Guys, welcome to episode number 221 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mr. Nathan Santos, back in the co-hosting chair. Brethren FC, and today, guys, we're here for pleasantries. We're here for the good times. We have, Mina and I coordinated the next month of Jersey Wall for you. So we know what it's going to look like. We know when we're going to start our transfer business, when we're going to get into our Christmas business, when we're going to get into our sneak peeks of what ifs, because that's coming back after a year and a half. So we're bringing back that episode as well. We got the Champions League group stage recap. We got lots of things lined up for the next couple of weeks. And today we're discussing like, okay, what do we have to do from last week? Last week we did disappointment. So it's only natural that we go into the Christmas season having put, as you mentioned, our laurels behind us. Now let's go in for pleasantries. Now for some of these, we might have personal attachments to. For others, it's just we have no real stakes in. So it's a pleasant or refreshing surprise to see how big of an impact some of these players that we're going to list have had, how great some of these clubs have been that we didn't think would be as good as they are. And we're not necessarily saying, at least I don't want to speak for you, Mina, but at least for me, that this is going to last for the whole season. We're not saying these are breakout stars. This is like the way that things are going to end. It's really just we're pleasantly surprised that after 15 odd games this season, we find ourselves in a position admiring a few players and a few clubs who we didn't necessarily think would be there, right?
Yeah, that's been my approach too. And I think also the important thing is to note that we kind of had certain expectations for at least some of the clubs that I put. I think there's going to be some overlap, but I had higher expectations, or I thought that this team would be decent, and they've exceeded that. So for me, that has been a pleasant surprise, right? So if I've expected something of a team and they've gone and surpassed it, for me, I've also qualified that as a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, that's fair. And that probably across the board for players as well. Exceeding expectations, if it hasn't directly contributed to our suffering, is a pleasant surprise.
Right.
Fair?
That makes sense.
All right, dude, let's get into it. I want to open the floor to you because you have your top five listed. I have a few that I'm going to fill in because Mina and I have not seen each other's lists, but we're pretty confident that we have some overlap between us. So I'm going to play second fiddle here. I want you to start. You can start by presenting something. You can start by asking it to me. Tell me, first and foremost, what's been your most, or I guess in that conversation, foremost pleasant surprise of the season so far?
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me go first here. And there's one that I'm going to hold on to at the moment because I think they're going to come up later in the episode. And I think they deserve it. And if they don't, well, we've got a honorable mention. So I'm going to go to Anthony Gordon, actually, of Newcastle.
No overlap on the first one. Tell me.
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise and a half, to be honest. He's played so far 14 games, not including this game week, and he's got 6 goals and 3 assists at left wing. And this is an Anthony Gordon where, if I can jog your memory back to the transfer window when he left Everton for Newcastle, what was the perception of that deal from everybody in the world of football, including probably Anthony Gordon himself?
Well, it was, I can't believe Chelsea are about to spend between 60 and 100 mil on this guy. What the hell are you doing? He's not that. Then Newcastle went and spent not that much. I don't think they spent that much.
I think they still spent like 40-something, 45.
A good amount of money for Anthony Gordon. And what did this dude end up doing? for Anthony Gordon. This fidget spinner has ruined me. For Anthony Gordon.
You say Anthony?
Anthony Gordon.
Wait a minute. You say you pronounce the H?
Honestly, I'm not sure until right now what I would have said, but hearing it, shouldn't it be? I know there's no TH in parts of...
It's like Natalie, right?
That's fair. That's fair. There are parts of England where TH is not a thing, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that
yeah.
Sound does not make that sound as we have it here, as it does
yeah,
across
sometimes
the pond.
It's an F.
Anthony Gordon. We'd have to ask his mom. What's your son's name?
Yeah, because
name?
Here's the thing. I've only ever first heard the H being pronounced when I moved to Canada, and some people were saying Anthony. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I think in the Queen's English, she says TH. I think she'd be like, Anthony Gordon. Right.
No,
whereas
Queen,
I think
Anthony with an F.
Yeah, whereas Harry Kane would be like, Anthony.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's funny, dude. I don't know, but that dude, Anthony Gordon, one of the two. Anthony. I think that they got Anthony Gordon. They paid for Anthony Gordon. And I say that in the best possible way. The thing is, I think this dude exceeded expectations, but is picking up on a fantastic U21 summer for him last year, where him and Cole Palmer were really the wingers in that team, both of whom have had pretty prolific starts to the campaign this season. And I think the biggest difference is with Anthony Gordon, let's call it what it is here. Pretty privilege is a thing, right? If a dude's good looking and marketable, this is that adds, as far as I'm concerned, point to me an example where that's not the case. Show me how many ugly, like top level superstars are. There's really not that many. This dude is not handsome.
If they are ugly, they become handsome when they get that money.
Right. And I'm waiting. I think he's waiting for that moment for him. Because literally for Ronaldo there, for Ronaldinho too, bro. Biggest teeth in the world.
Oh.
Ain't nobody criticizing him.
He's stuck with him though. To be fair to him.
If it's
no veneers, nothing like there was no Roberto Firmino like. Right. So good for him though.
Honestly, I don't think that Anthony Gordon has that pretty privilege. I think this dude, and this is not like the Rate Our Looks podcast or anything, but damn, dude. This is not the look of a superstar, right? We're not talking about like, oh yeah, he fits the bill. Yeah. Good looking cat. Not B. And so I think honestly for him, surpassing those expectations means that he's delivering the talent. Whereas you look at like Garnacho and they're like, oh, Garnacho, we want him to be the thing. Cause this dude's like, oh yeah, bro, I'm ready. I'm ready to fit the bill. He painted himself into this picture of I'm ready to be a superstar. When realistically, bro, if we're comparing talent for talent, those two players, I think he's a monster. He's way better.
I think he's playing in a better system that suits him.
That's for sure.
Garnacho's more playing talented a lot too. on his own ability at the moment. And I think, to be honest, like there's dips, right? So I don't know how old Anthony Gordon is, but yeah.
22.
I think they're very different players. Because one is way more direct. The other one's like, wants to be the guy, you know?
He's yeah, like, that's fair.
I'm him.
Yeah. No, but he has that confidence of the idea.
Yeah,
he's like,
he's got that.
Look at me, bro. I'm the next year. I'm like, shut up, bro. Like, I will even attempt this bicycle kick. Anthony Gordon's not attempting any bicycle kicks. He's going to dribble through your team, though, and score.
Yeah.
He's kind of a baller. I think you're right. Yeah. Dude's been really
It's been a pleasant surprise. Like, when I saw that transfer up, and I was like, why? Why are you just going for... Because, again, this is with the background of the rebuild that we did for Newcastle when they first got the cash. And I thought of the Saint-Maximin to Gordon on the left wing was a massive downgrade in ability. But again, like this is the reason why I'm over here and I'm not in Eddie Howe's seat. He saw something that he can actually do with Anthony Gordon and fit him into the system and into the style of play and the front three that he's trying to build. And I think for now, this is a great option for Newcastle and that they might wish to upgrade upon later on. And we know how expensive left wing players are right now, right? So if you get one that is effective at the moment, you know he's not going to be your superstar forever. But if you can get one that you can then take another step into the elites, then there's no reason to go for a 60-70 million pound player when you can get that later on after you've gotten, you know, what is looking like a 20 plus goal contribution season.
Well, I'm honestly thinking that for this player, I think that he might be exactly what they want to keep there, where they will not try to upgrade him, but they will try to complement him with a better winger eventually. I don't think that Anthony Gordon has a successor in this team, at least not as of right now, because I think that we're only starting to scratch the surface of his ability. I think that at the U21 World Cup,
that might be also true. Yeah,
he proved he's like, oh, I'm the best one of all these U21 guys. I'm winning Young Player of the Tournament here. It's me, right?
He's young enough for that. Yeah.
Then we're seeing his level ascend. And you're right, under the in the Eddie Howe system, he's been unbelievable, right? as he starts to emerge and as this partnership tends to bloom from the manager and the player, we're going to see the levels that he can take on, which means that maybe they won't need to replace him because they're going to say at 25, 26, this is a player who's capable of getting plenty of goals and assists. He's quick. He takes people on. He does everything that we need him to do in this system. Now, obviously, the caveat is if Newcastle eventually look to get a different manager than Eddie Howe, where they don't want to go from the hardest working side in the world to like a side that knows how to manage talent better and take over games and things like that, then maybe that manager doesn't want Anthony Gordon, fine. But I think right now, as we're looking at the ascension, I wouldn't look at this player as somebody to succeed. I think that he probably is the successor of our favorite blue collar gentleman, Mr. Harvey Barnes, who's playing there too, who they brought in, who were like, this is a proper 9-to-5 footballer, right? This dude just showing up for work every day, doing his job, working hard, no glitz, no glamour, get you what you need. Super professional, right? Anthony Gordon came in as the younger prospect to succeed who? The Saint-Maximins of the world, the Almirons of the world, who are just not that great, where I think it's part of, I know he's on the wide, so it's not the core, but part of the core essence of the project, which is young English talent that Newcastle can put their faith into. Remember, Newcastle are way ahead of schedule for this.
That's right? True. That's true. Also, so, what is going to be our opinion of him if his name was like Eze, right? Like if his name was completely, and he came with the swag from South London.
If he looked like Garnacho, this is what I'm talking about, the pretty privilege. If he looked like Garnacho, people would be like, this is a guy. This is also a superstar just got here.
Such a mayonnaise name too, right? Like he doesn't have an exciting name that someone can scream after a massive dribble or you know, a great goal.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could. You could just yell Gordon.
Gordon! That's proper Barclays. Premier League.
You're right.
Martin Tyler Barclays 2012.
That's an excellent point. It is absolutely proper Barclays. But anyway, so that's a good place to open it. I think it's a good, like, warm-hearted way to start the discussion. Because let's be real, it's not a dude who any of us are going to look at and be like, who does this guy think he is? Whereas a lot of players who come up, we're looking at them and like, who's this guy think he is? Like, bro, you're not that sick yet. Him, I think he's just, we're like, okay, what's this dude going to be? Like, that's too high a price tag for his talent. And we're seeing his talent. We're like, no, he's got something. He's on something here.
Yeah, he's backing it up. Good for
backing it up. I'm going to stick on the note of humility and Englishmen who are pleasantly surprising for what they're delivering. And that's, I'm going to bring up Mr. Ollie Watkins.
Yeah.
Now, as we record this,
one above actually, so there's the overlap. I like it.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah, it just feels like it's a nice segue from one point to another because I'm going to put, as we record this, Aston Villa are playing Arsenal. I don't know how this game's going to end, but at this moment, he hasn't scored for this game. However, his return on the season is in 15 games played. He's got 8 goals and 6 assists.
Yeah.
Fine. One of those was a hat trick, but are we going to hold that against him?
No,
well, he got a hat trick in a game. Fine. We're going to, you say, okay, well, you know, one of those was a hat trick, so it's in bunches. Go look through his matches. He's been pretty consistent. Tends to get a goal here, a goal there, a goal and an assist in this game. Then he won't score for one. We're not calling him world class or anything, but in the Unai Emery system, he's pretty much embodying exactly what he needs it to be, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I had him right above Anthony Gordon for a reason, right? Like there's strikers that actually surprise you after they've gone through a dip or something, or maybe they haven't had their best moments, and then they come back and you're like, yes, this is exactly what I thought you were going to be, or you're picking up from the good form that we knew you had and just didn't find it, like it went missing for a little bit, and it just seems like everything is clicking for him right now, you know, when strikers are on point. And again, I don't know if this is going to die down, but to have 14 goal involvements in 15 games, that is nothing to laugh at.
No, in the Premier League, bro. And not to mention, fine, he's been at Villa for the past 3 years. Where did he come from? Championship Brentford. This is a homegrown, from the football pyramids type player here who's now contributing. And you know, Amina, let's say he comes on and, for example, he ends the season with 15 goals and, you know, let's say he doesn't get another assist for the season. Just by example, this is still a player who is capable of generating 15 plus goals consistently in the Premier League. We look at like Callum Wilson's or, you know, and we go back in history of players who kind of fit that mold of an England B-tier striker who's just going to be there to collect those, you know, get those goals, get those numbers, but without necessarily the glitz and the glamour being at a top club. It's starting to be forgotten because the Premier League's diversifying in a way that they're looking for the sexiness, the marketability, the glitz, the glamour, the star boys from the other leagues. Who can we get as marketable? Bro, you have players like this who can show up, get you an Unai Emery who knows very well what his football identity is, put the striker in an advantageous position and have him consistently deliver numbers. We're talking fundamentals here, bro. We don't need, this is Sean Dyche ball. You know what I mean? This is Sean Dyche saying, what's our objective? Score and not be scored on. The very basics of football here. And it's not, you know, exorbitant or sexy. And some of the names on this who I have more stake, more sizzle, more flash, more bang, more like exciting names and prospects that are touted. I don't think Ollie Watkins was that. I think he was a player who did well in the championship. And Villa went, I think we could probably do something with him. And they have. And they haven't necessarily year by year where he's been this player. But in this system, under this manager, it works perfectly. And as long as Emery's there and as long as Watkins is fit, I see no reason why this trend shouldn't continue. Maybe not on the ascension, but if this is the peak of his powers, that's plenty. It's 15 games into the season. He has 14 goal involvements, dude.
You need that, man. You need that sure thing for clubs like that. And to be honest, like, he is carrying them a little bit. And in a season where you're working up and ramping up towards the Euros with Ivan Toney being out, I'm sure he's got his eyes on that. And if he continues on this trend, ends up with 20-something goals, it will be difficult to argue against him going to the Euros with England. Just stick him on the bench for something different.
But that's the thing. I honestly don't know if he's the kind of player to get called up in the same way that I don't know that Manchester United, who need a striker, go looking at Ollie Watkins. Because they're because I could just see them being like, there's something not there that I just won't quite go and get him. So, which is perfect for Villa.
In a tournament?
Villa sit here third in the Premier League right now with a player like this who won't be super sought after by bigger clubs, meaning he can just continue to do what he does at this club. It's not in the same breath as like Ivan Toney, because Ivan Toney is destined for top level football. We know that. Ivan Toney is...
he's got it.
So minimalistically below Harry Kane, where once we see Ivan Toney in a system better, we might say, okay, Ivan Toney's one of the best in the world. We might say that. We might be there saying that because that's the next jump. Like I'm saying here, I don't think that there's another jump for Watkins to take, but this consistency across the season should be enough that top level clubs go, okay, he clearly can score goals consistently. Why don't we want this? And I think it's that if we look at it and we say his ceiling is 15 goals a year, top level clubs go, I want one whose ceiling is 20. I want one whose floor is 20. I want a guaranteed goal scorer. So while they look at what's better and what's available and what they can get higher up to get those 5 or 6 more goals a season, he's going to stay just below that while ironically consistently outperforming those other dudes. This is Moneyball. That's why he was at Brentford. This is why he's at freaking Villa now under the system. I don't think there's a tier up for him to go, but if he just stays
marginal
at this level,
it's consistency. Dude,
if he could get 20 goal involvements a season, if for the whole season, what are we talking about? We're talking about a freaking outstanding player here.
Yeah, and why don't we just transition into Villa? Because we're right there, right? Like, I was going to leave Villa for a little bit later, but I think this kind of mini section of Ollie Watkins and Villa, like, is very deserved. Like, this is probably top of the list of pleasant surprises because of how high they've gone, right? I thought that Villa would be top 6, top 7. Like, eighth would be still respectable, a little bit below what they should have been, you know, expected to do. Yeah. But given the amount of teams that are fighting for those 8 positions, fine, that's respectable. To be third and comfortable is crazy. And we've touched on Unai Emery before, and they're currently beating Arsenal 1-0. And even if they don't end up winning that match, it doesn't matter. Arsenal are in the title race. They beat Man City last week. I know you don't want to bring it up, but it was a great performance. One of the worst performances from a City perspective, but that I think speaks more about how good Villa was on the day rather than City being limited without Rodri, for example.
Right. I don't even think it was a bad City performance. We dominated. We didn't win. And that's Villa. You know what I mean?
That's true.
They're like, do what you will. We're not going to concede and we're going to beat you. Who's the B-Tech City? Arsenal. What are they doing? They're beating us the exact same way.
Yeah.
They're beating Arsenal the same exact way they did us, which is taking points from those absolute monstrous teams. I'll be honest with you. I didn't put Villa on my list here. And it's not because they haven't been a pleasant surprise. It has nothing to do with the fact that they beat us. It's because I don't know that they're outperforming at this point in the season as highly as I thought. So you're right. We put them in like the seven to the like top six, top seven, top eight kind of bracket.
That's as many defeats.
I'm not saying I expected them. I know City have been terrible though. City have been on like really, really bad run of form. I'm not saying that I predicted Villa to be this good. Last season I did, and they came up short. So this is maybe it's just delayed gratification for me here. But Villa, I think at this point in the season, yes, you're right. They've been pleasantly surprising in the sense that we probably didn't think they'd be 5 points clear in third place ahead of, you know, treble winning Man City. So in that, from that perspective, I get it. I'm willing to entertain it. But let's look at like just in isolation, what Villa are doing 15 games into a season. 15 games into the season means they have, what, 20 plus weeks to fall, to do poor. Ollie Watkins' stats aren't going anywhere. If Ollie Watkins only manages the 14 goal involvements he has right now for the whole season, still a great return. Because 14 goal involvements in the Premier League season, not bad at all. Nothing to sneeze at in the slightest. Now, we'd probably be a little disappointed given how hot he started. But the point stands, they can stay there. Villa can drop a lot. Which means that Villa have the potential to fall a lot, whereas I don't think that Ollie Watkins does in the same sense. Ollie
at
Watkins
the top of the show, though, we said this isn't to say that they can drop from there. This is a snapshot of right now.
You're right. You're right. I guess my perspective is because they're able to be moved and they're in the same region of the table. They're not top of the league. They're top of the league. Fine. They're in the same region of position in the table. They're going to circulate in a top four battle. They drop into a top five. They're going to go seven. They're going to get back to to third. They're in that same kind of region that I'm like, okay, that's great for you guys. Maybe it is pleasantly surprised. Maybe I'm being harsh. But if I was looking at some of the players that I've put here, some of the teams I've put here in tandem with a player, right? So I'm like, this player is this club. I don't know that I can quite attribute that as much because I think that there's a lot of the Unai Emery system that is working here for them. But there's also a lot of room for this to go up and down. Whereas I think Watkins, in isolation, what he's done so far this season is produce 14 goals in 15 games. That's an epic freaking return.
Sure. They have scored 35 goals, though. So it's not like...
Yeah, they have another 20.
He is the majority contributor to it with 8 goals and 6 assists. So for sure, they would not be where they are without Ollie Watkins. But they are 8 points clear of fifth position. At the moment, of course they can drop. But being 8 points clear with 16 games played, when you've played Man City, you're currently beating Arsenal. You've played the big teams, is good. How many teams do we see in the higher up positions? But just because they've only played the easier teams and they still haven't had the difficult moments, it'll be interesting to see how they hold through the Christmas period to get through that. So let's talk about it again in February. But to say that it has not been pleasantly surprising for them to be third in the league right now, splitting Liverpool, Arsenal, and City, I think it's harsh on them.
That's fair.
Yeah, for sure they can move, but it has been surprising for me at least.
As I look at the table, they're only 2 points off top too. So that's actually, you know, to their credit.
I expected them to be where like Newcastle and Brighton are right now, which is 7th and 8th. And we expected higher things of Newcastle and Brighton. So it's flipped.
That's fair. Maybe that's fair. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being too harsh. Because you're right. The opposition they've beaten is the ones who'd expect to have beaten them, which means that I guess maybe subliminally, subconsciously, that's kind of weighing on me. I'm like, so what's going to cause them to fall? Because I am anticipating a fall and it'll be a team that's not as good as the ones that they've beaten, leading me to believe that it's like, okay, well, that's on brand then. That's just proper Prem right there. Right.
Because here's the thing. Like they beat Chelsea, they beat Brighton, they beat Spurs, they beat City, and they're currently beating Arsenal. There's nothing else you can ask from them.
Yeah, that you've done pretty much everything you asked from that team. Yeah, good for them. Honestly, okay. That's fair. Good for Villa.
Yeah.
Good for Villa, bro. All right, dude. Now, that one was kind of yours, but I feel like I led that with Watkins. Do you want to go next, or you want me to do another one?
No, Villa was mine. Like, I transitioned the Watkins conversation into Villa.
All right, bro. Good segue then. You know what I'm going to go then? On the note of this kind of race, it's going to be a player who I think has stood out beyond my expectations of him, given the fact that we look at where Man City are. And it's Jeremy Doku. Now, there's not a whole lot of players at City who I can say have been pleasantly surprising. And it's not because we're in a poor run of form. It's because who could possibly surprise me at Man City? You know what I mean? Like, I watch this team every single week for years and years on end. They're the best in the world. Them being great doesn't pleasantly surprise me. Mm-hmm. I expect them to be great. They're there because they are great, right? So all of them, for any of them to produce numbers, even, yeah, it's great. Haaland producing what he's producing, fantastic. But you're anticipating Haaland to produce that because it's Erling Haaland. So it's not a surprise. It's pleasant, fine, but it's not a surprise. Same thing goes for most of the players in the team. Now, earlier in the season, I might have said Julian Alvarez because I think he was off. He was doing some great stuff, but I feel like we mentioned him a little bit. Plus, he kind of grew into this, a World Cup winner and a treble winner. Jeremy Doku came in towards the end of the transfer window here and has just been electrifying. Like, dude, the outlet that he is for Man City is so refreshing to the, like, tiki-taka that we normally play. We're trying to operate in the channels, play through people, and people are, you know, making it so clustered, and it's frustrating because we don't have De Bruyne and we don't have Gundogan and we don't have players who we had at once to operate in those channels who are just beasts at breaking teams apart in those positions. So we need an outlet. And we look at our wingers, and who are they? They're Foden, Bernardo, weren't really wingers, but they're great at taking people on. And Grealish, who's really not that fast or explosive. He's fine at, you know, dribbling and bringing you up the pitch, but I mean, at breaking things apart, he's looking for fouls, basically. So he's looking to stop play. Doku's looking to explode by everybody.
Yeah.
This is a very, very refreshing skill set to see for City. And even Pep's like, oh my God, thank God that this dude's here. Where Jack Grealish, the man at the end of last season, Pep's like, yeah, Jack.
Take a seat,
brother. Because look, even for Pep to say a couple weeks ago in press conferences, just be like, oh my God, this is a freaking winger.
Yeah, he's pleasantly surprised with him.
Literally, he's like, oh my God. And you look at the way that he plays. He's giving him liberty. He's giving him freedom, bro. Pep didn't give Thierry Henry freedom when he played football. Pep told Thierry Henry, I don't care if you're scoring goals. You got to do it my way. So get the hell on the bench, bro.
It's a different
Thierry
Pep.
Henry.
It's a different Pep.
You're right.
That was like a small technical team.
Pep went to make
this
a point.
A big team with like strong guys and center backs across the front and the back four. Like,
I'm not daring to imply that Jeremy Doku takes precedence over Thierry Henry, obviously.
Hey, this is not the second Thierry Henry. This is the first Jeremy Doku.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said it, bro. Yes, that's exactly who he is. The Flash, the Belgian Flash, Jeremy Doku. Dude, take-ons, pace. He's electrifying. This is such a good football player with levels to his game that Pep will uncover for him, where he's either... Dude, he's leaving people for dead. And I say
because they don't know what he's going to do.
They don't know what he's going to do. Exactly.
He's
bro,
not like
how
a
many wingers in the world today do we know what they're going to do? Most of them
every
do. If they're left-footed on the right side, we know they're cutting in every time. Guaranteed. If they're right-footed on the left side, this is why left wingers are such a prospect. Sometimes they want to cut in, sometimes they want to go out. Who's in that conversation, bro? Kylian Mbappe, Vinicius, and Leao. Those are the players who you don't know what comes next from them. Those are the three best left wingers in the world. Who's next? Jeremy Doku's, you don't know where he's going to go. Now, he doesn't have the same output as the other one, so obviously he's not in that conversation. He also doesn't have the years of experience. Can he get there? Bro, clearly.
Big time.
Look at the trust Pep puts in him. Pep's like, dude, if you give Jeremy the football, react to what he does. If he goes to the byline, line up accordingly. If he cuts in, make the overlap, drift in the pocket to open up a channel for him. They have programmed City to what is Doku's input on what should happen next. That's nuts for a player who wasn't there for a treble campaign 4 months ago.
He was also brought in at the end of the window. I don't think because of a lack of something different
Mahrez,
in the team.
We
I think
sold
they just
Palmer. They were like, okay, we need.
They
a,
needed a body
winner.
Because they thought, who are we going to bring on when Grealish needs to take a seat? And now Grealish is taking a seat from the get-go. Like, it's who do we have? Because Doku's going to play. Doku and Haaland are going to play. Who's on the right? Who's going to be on the bench to come on one day when they need to be brought off? Yep. Yeah, you genuinely don't know what he's going to do. And it's a bag of tricks. It's so unexpected from someone that was not brought in to start every game. And even Pep is pleasantly surprised. So you can't argue against that.
The first young ballers, like ready for the next step episode we did was, I think, August of 2022, if I'm not mistaken. So that's what, almost 18 months ago now-ish? Mm-hmm. Jeremy Doku is number like 7 on that list. Where I was like, there's a couple clubs that I feel like could go to. So, you know who else was on that list? Sergio Gomez, who also ended up in Man City.
Hey, nice.
I didn't think that the left... So he ended up staying at Ren for another season. And then City go, okay, he's been unbelievable for the start to this campaign. Let's go get him. They pull the trigger on him. They pay for it with the money they got for Mahrez and for Palmer.
Yeah.
And he's been amongst our best players, which for most clubs, that's not that big of a compliment, because you're like, amongst, what does that mean? Like, amongst the best players. Okay, he's one of the top guys. To be amongst the best players at Man City, bro, dude, that's a very, very high bar. And I'm not saying that City are, you know, infallible. We obviously have criticism. We're in a terrible run of form. You're not going to flush me with this. We won a treble. I'm very happy with whatever happens. Trust me, we know what the runs that City go on in the new year. I'm not sweating in the slightest. Let's see what the table looks like in May. For right now, pleasantly surprised by Jeremy Doku, because City would be a lot worse off if Doku wasn't there this season. He's been, for even as poor as we've been, we'd be worse this season if not for Doku, because he's been a tremendous outlet for us moving up the pitch, for taking people on, for creating chances, for creating space. I love wingers like this, man. I haven't had one since Leroy. And Leroy, we knew what he was going to do all the time too, but he was just
such a glider. So
it was just awesome the way that he would glide. Doku's, his nickname's the Belgian Flash, bro. He literally is. He's so explosive. He's so electrifying. He's got, 7 goal involvements in 11 games in the Prem. Not like insane nothing return or anything, though. but nothing to laugh at. And when you consider that this is just the first step, it's his first season here, and you already see the impact that he has, I can't wait to see what this looks like. Because like I said, there's 3 world-class left wingers in the world. Kylian Mbappe is number one, and then discuss amongst yourselves between Leao and Vinicius. Doku is that cloth, because except for Mbappe, the other two at one point were flashy wingers who needed to develop output.
Yeah.
Doku's there now.
Bro, think of the output see what the next that step. He got out of Sterling. Just think about that. And the ability that Doku has over Sterling.
Yeah. Sterling could read the game well. Sterling was a good reader of the game, but not. He had a lot of limitations with the ball at his feet.
Yeah.
Doku has no limitations with the ball at his feet. I want to see how he progresses with his ability. Yeah. So versatile, so unbelievable. Anyway, that's enough on Doku. That, for me, Pleasant Spence, the only Man City player I'm going to list today. But I feel like he definitely deserves his credit here.
Yeah. By the way, Villa still beating Arsenal.
Are they? What's the score?
It is still
1-0. Oh, dude, yeah, they're about to blow.
It's still 1-0. They're in 5 minutes. They're in minute number 5 of 5 minutes of at a time. So I think it's
I've seen Arsenal win it later than that, though.
Yeah. Well, it's almost a short thing. Like 99.9. Bar some bullshit from Arsenal.
Place your bets on Arsenal right now, folks. This is the time when the odds will be the best and Arsenal will still somehow win this thing. Anyway, go ahead. Who's yours?
My next one is a little bit surprising, but that's the whole point. Girona.
As if you weren't going to leave me to say Girona. Of course we have Girona on this list, dude.
We have to have Girona on this list. Who's not going to have Girona on this list? 12 wins, 2 draws, and 1 loss. Sitting, right behind Real Madrid?
Second to Real Madrid with a game in hand.
What are we talking about here? This is like the run that Union Berlin had last year, right?
I have some stats for Girona here, if you'd like to hear.
Give me the stats.
I'm going to give you the stats because this might be more similar to a Leicester story than anything else like that we've had. And it's not the Prem, so it's not quite the same. And let's see what this looks like throughout the campaign. Girona have some names. They're owned by the City Football Group, so it kind of taints it a little bit because they actually do have some players who are City loanees, basically. And, you know, City know how to build a club. So they've kind of done this with Girona. But you think of this team who shot up the table, who's in relegation conversation pretty much every year, and now are in first place 40% of the way through the season, basically. 29 of their 34 goals have come from open play. Which is huge, because you'd think that, maybe they're doing what Villa does. Maybe they're shutting teams out. They're winning one goal a game. They have 34 goals this season. One of them is a penalty. The others are set pieces. And then 29 are from open play. They average 2.3 goals a game, which is nuts, because think of how hard it is to score. Yeah. They average 58% possession. Meaning they're ball dominant. So they're winning games by playing football here, bro. Their XG is 28.3 and they've scored 34. So they're outperforming their XG. They've created the second most big chances this season at 40, only second to Barca. And they've also missed the second most amount of big chances this season at 29, which I only say because 29 is the second highest big chances created, which they've missed. Where could they be had they been more clinical with these? Because remember, the quality of the side is not that high. So you'd expect them to miss the chance because they don't have those lethal players. How far could this team actually be if they're converting on their big chances?
Yeah.
They have 38 points, which is second place. Only second to Madrid, which, like I said, they have a game in hand over Real Madrid, who drew this morning to Betis. Dude, this is a footballing side here. And
yeah,
it's a little bit of...
I appreciate those stats because it does actually paint the picture a little bit more.
That's exactly right. Because I was afraid that people would look at this and say, okay, well, you know, they're fluking this and they can't defend like this forever.
Yeah.
You know, it is the Union Berlin story a little bit from last season where you're just like, okay, at what point do you fall out of a title race? And surely they have to at some point. You'd expect... They've got
Barcelona next.
Fine, they got Barcelona next. Barcelona and Real Madrid have other competitions that they're going to focus on as well. And if this side is good enough to dominate football matches, which is what they're doing, and win their games by outscoring opponents, even though they're conceding about a goal a game, fine. They're doubling that. They're tripling that. They're doing two and a half times that, right? The ratio is pretty freaking good. And they're not doing it by fluke. They're doing it by dominating football matches, by scoring goals in open play consistently.
Yeah. Being more efficient with their possession than Barcelona is, because Barcelona will take 80% possession and they won't actually do anything with it. Yeah. Relying on Lamine Yamal to do something after high school to just come in and actually
start when he finishes his math homework.
Yeah. When he's done. Boys making a terrarium at school and then coming in.
He's dissecting the frogs during the day and dissecting defenses at night, bro.
Yeah. He's adding. Nice. I like it. He's making terrariums out of the grass they sold for Camp Nou pitch.
Yeah, Girona are definitely one of the biggest pleasant surprises this season. Because let's be real, nobody hates Girona, and I think when people find out that, like,
who knows anything about Girona, bro?
Because they're part of the CFG, and ready, Pep and his brother are like majority owners of this club. So just think of this. I'm going to paint everybody a picture here.
116 charges plus one, bro. That
put on your tinfoil hats here.
That can't be real.
When Girona are in the Champions League next season and City face 100 and something charges and we get penalized for them, all the players are being loaned to Girona in the thing. We're going to win La Liga and then they're all going to be shipped.
116, bro. Plus.
Oh my God, dude. It's so funny. Like, I love the CFG. The other thing is, by the way, on the note of CFG, so very sadly, Santos FC were relegated for the first time in their 111-year history to the second tier of the Brazilian Football League.
Yeah, nobody
the cares. Team who finished 1 point above them to stay up was Bahia FC, who is also owned by the CFG.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, Santos, I'm so sorry for your history. Shove it, because we're staying in this league, bro. Oh, how I love to be the heels, man. It's so funny. But listen, on Girona, the likes of Daily Blind, the likes of Yanhel Herrera, Jan Couto. I don't know if people have the same proficiency with the other two. Daily Blind's just a good senior figure to have in the team. But the other two are City loanees, and they're City loanees who have kind of served at different clubs in different times, who City kind of just buffer with. That's why they have the CFG to loan people out. Also, Savinho, if I'm not mistaken, he's got like 8 goal contributions for them this season. These players are playing for what? To earn their spot in the City side, which means... The culture of this club right now is City are allocating resources for them to succeed, but not in the way that we're like, okay, yeah, we'll send you Bernardo Silva to help you out. Like the way that Newcastle are going to do with Ruben Neves, right? Which is cheating. We're like, yo, we have academy. Like, these are basically players who we bought for cheap. Let's see if they can end up with
us. And it's mutually beneficial because then they actually get to play first tier football.
Exactly. Literally. So I think that the more people find out about how Girona's really just run by City Footballing Group, they might not like them as much. They might not like them as much.
Yeah.
But for now, it seems like the Leicester story. And I think that's the story they want you to believe, right? We're just the Spanish Leicester. We're coming up, small club. We have a good manager.
It's like RB
Salzburg. Good person. Yeah, exactly, bro. They're just Salzburg.
They just have more resources than anyone. That like Deportivo's like, come on, guys, who's gonna say, hey, Qatar, please come save us.
Anyway, but I do like this club. I like that. I like that it's interesting parity for the league without players who are superstars, right? The fact that a club like this can come up, not come up because I don't think they're relegated, but I mean, come up from the lower ends of the table to then, you know, one season struggle to get 38 points and then the next season be 38 points in after already
15 games,
15 odd games. It's pretty unbelievable return, especially when you look at the caliber of the sides, even if they are city loanees. Like we mentioned, they're city loanees playing for contracts. They're playing against the Jude Bellinghams, the Pedris, the Camavingas, the Lewandowskis of the world. You know what I mean? So like, and not that doesn't even do justice to Simeone's side, who, by the way, are as good as ever right now, right?
Plus, it's not like City and Pep are coaching this team week in, week out, right? Like the infrastructure is there. The resources are there for sure. Yeah. That makes it, that takes you 60% of the way or 80% of the way. But because some teams like, let's say Valladolid or whoever else is in the bottom, I don't really care. I don't look past top three or four in Spain.
Yeah.
But anyone else that's down there, it's not like those resources don't help Girona. For sure they do. But again, Pep's not sending voice notes to the coach every time he has a conflict with the player. Someone actually has to go and do the work.
No, the coach, his name is Michael or something like that. I don't know how it's pronounced for him. I won't pretend to know. He's 48 years old and he's Spanish.
Usually if it's Michael, it's just Michael.
Right, it's Michael, but it's Spanish Michael, so it's Michael. He's been managing like relegation-ish sides in La Liga in years past. But the fact that there's probably a lot of managers, even in the Premier League, who you look at who could probably do more if given advantageous positions to do so. And he's just like, yo, we're going to play this way. And with the personnel and everything they have, the infrastructure this season, it's working. And that's honestly, it's good for parity. It's good for the sport. It's exciting to see that things like that happen. Because right now, people don't know enough about Girona to hate Girona. I think that people will just be like, it's cool. It's a team in the south of Spain.
People also stopped caring about La Liga, dude. Like, they don't even. Bro, if nobody cares about.
Let's be real. If you and I won the lottery tomorrow, you know what team we're supporting? We're supporting Girona because we're going to move to the south of Spain and they're going to be there. That's right? Cool. Like, dude, come on. This is everybody's dream club.
And they don't have the, like, heel energy yet, I guess.
No.
That Valencia and Sevilla do. Right? Because Valencia and Sevilla actually have caused big teams pain in Europe. Right. And Bilbao as well. Like, Bilbao has something like you're familiar with them. Nobody's familiar with Girona.
No, nobody knows. Why would you?
And on the off chance,
that's why we're
a Girona fan listening. Full offense. Like, I don't think we're
gonna... He's just a Spanish City fan.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go. Shall we move on to another one? I want to move to the Bundesliga if we can, please. And thank you.
Please.
But it's not for where you think we're going to go. Obviously, I have someone we're going to go with. Yeah.
Bayern is pleasantly surprised.
Obviously, we have a direction we're going to go in with the Bundesliga. But I want to start with just an individual. And it's Xavi Simons.
Yeah.
Pleasantly surprising. And maybe I shouldn't be because of how great he was last season for PSV. But and speaking of PSV, I could probably put them in an honorable mention. PSV, 15 for 15 this season. Let's just do
That's
a quick shout out on PSV.
That's incredible.
52 goals for, 6 against.
They're 52 nuts. Goals in 15 games?
Yeah, they're nuts, bro. Not to mention, get this, because I did put them down, but they'll just be an honorable mention. Great spread of goals throughout the team. They have 4 players with over 10 goal involvements. De Jong has 16.
Already?
Bakayoko has 11. Till has 10. Veerman has 12. They're second in their Champions League group right now, which let's see if that comes up next week when we're discussing the end of the group. So that's PSV in isolation.
Are they in Arsenal's group or Barcelona?
Yeah, they're in Arsenal's group with Lens. So they have been, forget the Champions League for a second, just domestically, they've been ass kickers. Do you remember who played for PSV last season? Xavi Simons and Cody Gakpo, bro. Yeah. Dude, monsters who were kicking ass for them last season. So you go, okay, well, where do they go from here? They've only got better. Xavi Simons, same thing for him. Dude, there's so
they were
few
holding
players.
Them back. There's
Cody Gakpo, you suck, bro. Xavi Simons, you're great because you didn't go to Liverpool and therefore automatically I love you, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
13 games played, 4 goals, 7 assists. There's not players like Xavi Simons that exist because there's not players who are allowed to play like this.
Yeah, I agree.
The freedom that he has to play, I don't want to see him in the Premier League because I don't think he's going to be this dude in the Premier League because no coach in the Premier League will allow him to play like this. But in the Bundesliga, and in the French league when he goes to join up with PSG next season, or in wherever it is that he's pretty much anywhere but the Prem, he has the versatility. Even if he went to Spain, bro, if he went to go back to Real Madrid, the former La Masia graduate, to go play in the Bellingham role, he'd be outstanding. He'd be outstanding. He could totally do that. It would be so good for the story for him to do that. His footballing ability is, like we were mentioning Doku before, manager trusting his decision. It's manager saying, okay, bro, go produce. What can you do? And I love that this player exists. And I'm sad that this player, that more players like this don't exist, because it's old school football.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. There's so many like beige, bland, like just output only players that don't really do anything exciting, right? Like the gone are the days of an exciting winger that you're just happy to watch and knowing that he probably won't exceed 12 goals a season, right? And we were happy seeing that. Like, think of how many players have more goals in La Liga than Ronaldinho does, for example. But we don't measure those kinds of players on like that. But Xavi Simons is producing output and also being that guy, the entertaining player that, again, unpredictable, versatile, you can rely on to produce something special or get you off your seat, and it's just entertaining to watch. And in a world of machines and XG and all that kind of stuff, it's just refreshing to see.
Yeah, he's a fun player to watch. And honestly, it's been pleasantly surprising to see that he's continued his ascension. I guess that's really how we tie it back to the point here. Because the point is, he was great last season in the Dutch league, but it was basically like, you are far too good to be here right now. So you must be doing something else. So what do? The gradual next step? Okay, let's see how he does in the Bundesliga. And still, it looks like you are far too good to be here right now. You are clearly an upper echelon player in this league, capable of more. And I think the ones who are laughing all the way to the bank here is PSG, because PSG are going to have this player come back in where they're either, I don't even think they'll try to sell him, but hypothetically, because they're going to have Mbappe boots to fill, so they're going to need a guy who can like make things happen. The PSG are going to look at this and go, okay, we just got a player whose development has come at no cost for us for the last two seasons while he's been abroad, who can continue to do this in the same thing here, because our league is not stronger than Germany's, basically. Or maybe they do decide to cash in on him because somebody's like, you know what, we need this dude to come back.
Big money.
And they make some big money because, you know, they could probably, the way that Luis Campos wants to do this is like, it's not with his hands tied. It's like, no, let's, you know, I have money, but that doesn't mean that I have, you know, I also want a Xavi Simons type player, right? So I wonder what kind of, you know, what his future looks like. For right now, I love that this player is allowed to exist. I love that he's balling out. And I love that he hasn't yet moved to a club that will make me dislike him.
Fair enough. Like he goes to Chelsea or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, no, please, bro. Don't even
just another one.
Just to replace
80 million, Nkunku. Signs a 7-year deal.
Sorry, Nkunku.
Yeah.
7 years. No, 17 years. He's only 20. They're keeping him to his cargo self age. Tell me, who's your next one?
All right, man. My next one is actually kind of boring, but I think we need to mention them.
Good stuff.
Because nobody else is going to
close the episode, everybody. Keep listening, please. We're going to make it interesting.
Yeah, please. We're gonna brush past this, but credit needs to be given where it's due. And I didn't think this team would be here, and it's Juventus.
Oh, you're so boring. This is not a pleasant surprise. This is a surprise. Why is it pleasant? No. They've been so boring, bro. I'm going to watch paint dry and watch Juve.
Awful. They've been awful. And you have to give credit where it's due when someone actually does what they're supposed to do, having been shit for the last 3 or 4 years. Of 15 games, they've got 11 wins, 3 draws, and 1 loss. The 1 loss is great, to be honest.
Why is that?
Because it's good. They've only conceded 9 goals.
Right, right.
In 15 games. It's good that
they haven't been unbeaten. Dude, I'll be honest with you. This is not pleasant surprises for me. The ones who I have are players who make me excited or teams that I'm excited to discuss because that's what's been pleasant. I'm like, wow.
I understand.
Nothing's been pleasant about the Serie A as far as I'm concerned so far.
No, nothing's been pleasant about the Serie A. But
least of all, think of how dominant we thought
Inter was going to be. And Inter's only 1 point behind with a game in hand.
I don't like Inter, but I like watching Inter.
Or the Serie A. I don't care about them at all. However, it's been a decent surprise.
Fair enough. It's been, I mean, if you're from Turin, you're probably like, there's a play. Yeah, very play. But then again, I don't even think that's true because they knew what they could expect from Allegri Ball. They had it before. They were bored with it. Mm. They didn't want to win that way, which is why they went for Pirlo, not great at communicating his message. So I don't think that this is actually a pleasant surprise because I think people are either not surprised or it's just not pleasant. So it doesn't fit either of our definitions here.
For me, when I opened the Serie A table, I was like, oh, Juve is back. That's how I quantified it.
That's fair.
Not that I care enough about Juve to be like, oh, I'm so excited that Juve is, but no, I couldn't give a shit. But when I opened the Serie A table, I was like, oh, wait a minute. How are they up?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Anyway, I don't want to spend more time on them because you know what? And in fact, I'm going to throw my Hail Mary.
I wanted just brush past them.
I'm going to throw my Hail Mary just to get interest back. A pleasant surprise for a team this season is the one who sits atop of the Bundesliga table, and it's Xabi Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen side.
Can I show you that I had them and they were like just below, but only because I knew you were going to bring them up and I don't want to take that away from you.
That's okay. No, you're right. Cause this is the Bundesliga crown that I have to, you know, present to the world basically. Now in this, I put the club cause there's a lot of things that we could talk about for them. So by now, if you haven't heard, you must be living under a rock if you haven't heard about this side. This is the most exciting team in Europe. They're still unbeaten. The way that they play football is exceptionally fun to watch because of the style in which they play, which is a 3-4-2-1-ish, 1-2-ish, depending on the day. Florian Wirtz is one of the best players in world football. Alex Grimaldo is finally getting the praise that he deserves. He's got 4 goals and 7 assists. That's the same return as Xavi Simons, by the way, who's touted as one of the highest prospects in the world. Grimaldo has that playing at left wing back for a thing. That's more of a surprise, by the way, because Frimpong's been that dude for some time. And we've seen it in this team. The top of the list, though, is for Victor Boniface, who's got 8 goals and 5 assists in like 11 odd games or something like that.
Very respectful.
This team is thrilling. And bro, we probably thought they'd be exciting this season. We didn't think they'd be unbeatable.
Not this exciting. Yeah.
Not this exciting or this good. Because teams like this should lend themselves to failure quite often, which is if you're playing football in the way they're going to, which is making your top players look good, utilizing wingbacks who are going to freaking attack with everything, having a great goal scorer who happens to hit the ground running and one of the best things in the world, you'd go, what's the limitation? They're going to be super exposed. There's going to be times when they can't get back in time where they're going to get carved open. As we record this, either that has not happened or it has not ended in defeat for them. The worst thing that's happened in the season is they drew.
Yeah.
The Bundesliga campaign, bro, is only 34 games, which means they're halfway done their season.
Oh, true.
You know what I mean? The midway, they're about to go for a winter break because the Bundesliga is going to shut down for the month, which means that they will come back fully recharged, fully rested, fully recovered. And at the peak of their powers, we know they close the first chapter of the season off without having tasted defeat domestically or abroad. Dude.
They do lose Victor Boniface, though.
That's true. Yeah, I wonder how that affects everything.
The fear.
You know what? Patrick Schick comes back in. I wonder how well he can adjust for just picking up goals for a few months. Because let's be real. Victor Boniface is from where? Nigeria. How far is Nigeria going to go in this tournament?
He's Victor. And like, what do you mean? He's a Victor striker.
No, I'm asking rhetorically. I mean, how far is Nigeria going to go in this tournament? Because Super Eagles seem like they're nasty. But the way that they've been playing actually has not been the best in the tournament, right? They've been disappointed. I remember you were telling me, they're like, bro, Nigeria can't click into gear here, which means that all these excellent Nigerian players who are going to have to rejoin the team, if they can get it together, you know what? I'll be the first one to put on that jersey and rep them. I hope genuinely that they come second place because I won't cheer against your Egypt. However, yeah,
thank you. I appreciate that.
However, if this team can't get into gear, that actually only benefits the clubs that which they play for because all of these guys are cooking at their clubs. They just can't figure it out for their international team. When Nigeria figures it out as an international superpower, brother, goodness me. Watch out for the World Cup, bro. Because
Nigeria does always produce talent. Since forever.
Got to start producing some center backs, though.
That is true.
You know what I mean? But then again, you know what? Fikayo Tomori declares for them, and all of a sudden, bro, you got one of the best spines in the world for your team.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. But Nigeria is always one of the top, like, talent producers in Africa. Yeah. specifically for European football. Because a lot of countries like Egypt, for example, we don't send a lot of players out, but historically we've been one of the bigger teams. Algeria sends them all to France, that kind of stuff. Nigeria has always developed it across Europe, whether it's been in England or France or in Germany. They've always been able to produce that, or in Italy, obviously, with Osimhen. But I was trying to look up their group for AFCON, and I couldn't find it right now, but we'll talk about AFCON later. Maybe getting back to Leverkusen, maybe when he's gone is when they go back to relying a little bit more on Florian Wirtz to or produce Patrick that Schick magical or moment.
Because the thing is, they do spread goals out throughout their team. So while Victor Boniface has done well, he's run right, he's produced 13 goals in the team, like, that's big. I would argue that it's not the linchpin for their success. I would still say that there's a lot of things that can go well for them. And if they're not thrashing teams, you know, 5-0, maybe they win 3-2.
Right.
Like, it's a huge omission because he's very, very, very good. Like, he's Dorman 4 months in a row rookie of the month. Dude, think about this. Every month he's played in this league, they're like, yeah, you're the best one, dude.
He's way too good.
He's way too good. For August, for September, for October, for November, he's been the rookie of the month because he came into this league and they give rookie of the month for per month. And he's won it every single time. That's crazy, man. He's such a good player.
At which point does he no longer become a rookie?
I think you're a rookie for the entire first season that you're there.
Yeah.
So everybody who's a newcomer to the league has an equal chance to win this
every month.
He's deprived it from all of his teammates at Leverkusen and Xavi Simons. He's like, yeah, that's sick. I'm taking this award, bro. This one's mine. I love the way that Bayer Leverkusen play football. And honestly, it's the most pleasant, surprising thing because this is going to be, we did a whole episode on this, bro. We're overdue for another one. Teams the streets will never forget. This is going to be one of those teams. We will look at this years on and we're going to go, bro, do you remember that season where Leverkusen were just freaking unplayable?
Bro, here's the thing. How funny, just because the Bundesliga is always hilarious to me. And you know my opinions on it, right? Like, I respect
I know where you're going with this already.
How funny.
I want you to say it.
If Marco Reus's first season stepping down as captain is the year that Leverkusen take the league off Bayern rather than Dortmund.
It would be something. I think it would be funnier for Harry Kane to come in and looking for a trophy and not win the league in his first.
That is a double-edged sword that I would love.
It would be funny. It would be quite funny for the jokes of it all. I want to move on from Bayer Leverkusen because I think that they're excellent and I don't think there's a whole lot left to say for them. I only have a few other things to mention. Have you finished your list?
Yeah, I'm done.
You finished your list? Okay, so let's just
Leverkusen was my sixth.
Leverkusen was your sixth. Okay. Leverkusen was like number one for me. I have a few more, but I don't have as much to say.
I knew you were gonna speak about it.
Fair. There's a few things that I would like to mention. And we'll wrap on these because I'm not gonna put them all in order. The first one is Warren Zaire-Emery. Pleasantly surprising because we saw him play last season. He was 16 years old when he emerged. I can't believe that at 17, he's this good.
Me neither. And just so comfortable at being this good. It's a different thing, right? Because Jude Bellingham is great, but he's so comfortable at being this good. And Zaire-Emery has something so similar. Like, he's just so comfortable being with France in the first team. So much so that he's probably going to go to the Euros. And he's just like, yeah, whatever. Cool.
Yeah. The fact that he's walking into a team where literally he's walking into a team where Luis Enrique is like, yeah, I have the likes of Carlos Soler and Fabian Ruiz, and I had Renato Sanchez, who I got rid of. Ugarte is going to play alongside Vitinha with you. All these players who have been proven elsewhere, they mean nothing to me. I want you to facilitate things in this midfield. And he's 17. And the reason that I'm so like, you know, I have a thing for this, because when Jude Bellingham was 17, I was freaking out. I was like, in 4 years, he'll still be playing with the U21s. This is that again. We have a player here who 4 years from now can still be playing with the U21s. And instead, he's maybe a top three player at PSG. Think of the talent at PSG. Warren Zaire-Emery might be a top three talent there currently. And by the way, one is taken with the best player on planet Earth. That's nuts, dude. How can you be that good at football already? What is your ceiling? What's going to happen with this? And I think that this is partially to do with Luis Campos, but it's the fact that PSG have had excellent talent like this for a long time, and they've tended to ship him elsewhere. So I think for PSG, he is going to be, in some capacity, a real cornerstone for this team to look internally and go, we have terrific players in our academy. Maybe we should nurture them. And then the likes of the Presnel Kimpembe, who we're calling pretty much homegrown, the Magnan, the Nkunkus of the world. Imagine if PSG became a homegrown team. Because, bro, I'm not certain that they wouldn't be the best team in the world if they had been. You know what I mean? Like, if they're just producing these players, you know who that would remind me of, Mina, truthfully?
Who?
Manchester United of old.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
When their academy's pumping out talent like that, and they're the best in the world, and all of them are from their own freaking academy, dude. Think of how far PSG are in terms of reputation from where the Manchester United of old was. Like, think of what the PSG project has been about, trying to buy, basically the Galactico approach, trying to buy make things as, you know, as glitz and glamorous as possible. And instead, the whole solution was be old school Manchester United, look internally, because you have some of the best prospects in the world sitting right there, and Zaire Emery's living proof of it.
Yeah, it would put them up amongst Ajax. Like, that's the conversation that they have now, right? Like, think of the respect that they would gain for keeping those players.
It's unbelievable. He's such a good player. But I don't want to spend all the time on him because there's two more and then we're going to wrap. Nice as a club.
Mm. Is Nice? Because I won't pretend to know where they are in the table right now.
They're okay. I was going to say they're in the south of France. Nice are in second, and they were first up until very, very, very recently. They suffered their first defeat last weekend to Nantes. Or sorry, they're third now, but they're 1 point behind Monaco for second. It's really not the entire point of them. It's not about whether or not they're going to win the league. It's about how Francisco Farioli has made this the best defensive team in Europe. Mina, they're 15 games into the season. They've conceded 5 times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That's stupid.
If you're conceding once every 3 games and your name is Nice, you're like, how? And remember earlier I mentioned some players being associated with clubs. Todibo is back. This is like the club that he's playing alongside a 40-year-old Dante. And I won't say it's just because of him, but this is the player that people will look at. They're like,
someone has to how have legs, Nice? Bro.
Right. They're going to look at Farioli, and they're going to, who's a very young coach, but coaching to the point where the team never concede. Bro, a team never concedes if they're conceding less than a goal a game. If they're conceding once every 2 games, even better.
Right.
How small can we get this margin here? Because we're starting to look at like Jose Mourinho, Chelsea with Peter Cech conceding 14 times in the whole season. They're 5 goals. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, bro. On one hand, I can count how many goals they've conceded. It's freaking nuts for them. And I don't care what their top potential is of what their ceiling is, how many players in their team are going to be great or world-class. None of that interests me in the slightest. They do not concede goals. They have one of the best center backs in the world. And when you start looking at managers who clubs are going to look at, okay, I want, you know, to build my team on proper defense, good connections, and making use of the talent we have, because we don't have a whole lot of money to spend, they're going to look at Farioli as one of the next ones.
Good for him, man. Let's see how many they can hold on to by the end of the year.
Single digits.
Yeah? Do you think sub 10?
No, that would just be nuts. I'll get their jersey. No, sub 15.
Okay.
Right, sub 15. I think that they'll break a defensive record. I think that they'll be.
Yeah, I was going to say that has to be a record.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual French record is, but it'll be up there because they just don't concede.
Next time they play PSG, Mbappe just scores a super hat trick.
Yeah, in the first half, like, damn. Ruined it. Damn,
you know, it's signed Todibo in January and then it's gone. It's just 25.
Yeah,
goals
exactly. Yeah, that's
for the next 3 games. Lining.
That's fair. If that happens, then yeah, they're going to have a real tough time. The last one that I want to end on, and it really is an honorable mention because I don't know how many people care anymore, but I definitely care. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo has 16 goals and 8 assists in 15 games played.
15 games? Mina, wow. That's
24 nice. Goal involvements in 15 games played. He turns 39 in February.
39, yeah.
He turns 39 in February. He's got 60 goal involvements in 2023 as we record this today.
Wow, that's crazy.
38.
Regardless of the league, that's pretty. Those are pretty 60, special numbers,
bro. Oh man.
You know how many Saudis they're putting out in Saudi Arabia?
You're gonna rename the country, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, where do you live? I'm from Saudi Arabia.
That's basically how they say it anyway.
I think that was the pitch to him. Like, we will literally name our country after your celebration, bro. We'll change the name of it. For me, this is, I don't know, because I know, you know, I think any mention currently of like Ronaldo or Messi is just always going to be tied to, you know, the rivalry and the GOAT thing and who won and the fact that Messi has, he's probably going to get the Ballon d'Or next year too. Because why not? Let's just keep giving him Ballon d'Ors. Who cares? We just love. When you actually look at this and you go, this don't dude is
me, man. Let me drink
38 years old and has 60 goal involvements in 2023. That's nuts. For any league, I don't give a shit. But that's absolutely preposterous that he has that many. And by the way, like three hat tricks this season already?
Wow. Crazy.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff that he's doing.
Yeah, and man. Someone dude still works out like it's day one for him.
Yeah. His thirst to succeed.
That's the secret sauce.
Honestly. And genetics.
Yeah.
And money. So just don't think any of us could recreate the CR7 abilities. Guys, for me, this has to end the pleasant surprises of the season so far. Would you agree, Mina? Anything else to add here?
I would agree. Yeah. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, are you sure? You look like you're biting your tongue here.
I thought of something, but tell it's me. So out of pocket.
Tell me, is it listener safe?
I don't know. I was gonna say I think you missed out mentioning Marta Diaz tearing her ACL being as a pleasant surprise.
No, bro, that's not a pleasant surprise. We feel nothing but sympathy for Marta Diaz and her torn knees.
She's had a tough year.
And we wish her all the best going forward. Guys, that's going to wrap it for episode number 221 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. As always, I'll be your host, Mr. Nathan Santos, with me. I had Brethren in the co-hosting chair. Dude, thank you.
Thanks again for having me. Always here to bring the silliness.
It's so much fun to have you on to bring this kind of silliness. And I'm really looking forward to what December is going to hold for Jersey Wall, because we have everything lined up. We know what we're recording. We have programming here scheduled for the next month. So we're going to close out 2023 really strong. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in each and every week. We appreciate you sincerely. If you want more Jersey Wall content, click on the link in the description. Otherwise, we'll see you next time right here on the Jersey Wall Podcast.